are the only one who can do it. Yes, sir. Thank you, sir. I appreciate it, sir. Handing the set back to Dan, his tone went back to flat hardness. He will be here in 5 minutes. Nodding inside his helmet, Dan said, good. Now, where are the prisoners? The Russian looked at him blankly. The prisoners? The prisoners, Dan snapped, lifting his hand so that the muzzle of his gun pointed at the Russian's bulbous nose. We have 12,000 prisoners here, the Russian said. Which do you want? 12,000? Dan's mind reeled. 12,000? I had no idea they had brought so many up here. They can't all be working the mines. Most of them must be just rotting away up here, exiled forever. He forced the picture from his mind. The prisoners that were just brought in from a private spacecraft. They're not Soviet citizens. The capitalists? Said the Russian. Yes, Dan said, the capitalists. Where are they? In a holding cell 2 levels down. How are they guarded? He shrugged his fat shoulders. I don't know. That's none of my business. The door swung open and Dan reflexively turned toward it, gun pointed. So did the other 4 of his crew. Vasily Malik stepped through the doorway and stopped, his eyes instantly taking in the situation. He was wearing spanking new coveralls, the trousers still creased, the collar open casually. His mouth dropped open in surprise. This isn't the base commander, Dan growled. Who are you? Malik demanded. What is going on here? Why are you here? Where's the base commander? Malik's eyes went crafty. I came here a few hours ago to supervise the transfer of a group of thieving pirates to the Soviet Union, where they will be tried by an international court. Dan realized that his finger was curling around the trigger of his pistol. With a deliberate effort, he eased the pressure. I want those prisoners freed, he said. I won't release them, Malik replied. They are in the custody of the Soviet Union, and they will remain so. Dan strode over to the control boards. Which of these panels monitors the air to the living quarters? Do you want me to shut it off, or turn off the heat, or overload the main generator so badly that they'll burn out and leave the whole base dead? Malik's eyes were studying him, trying to pierce through the gold-tinted visor to see the face behind it. Dan was speaking in Russian, and his voice was muffled by the helmet, but he could see that Malik was straining to identify him. I'm not playing games, Dan shouted. I'll wipe this base out completely if you don't release those prisoners. The Russians, sitting on the floor, were all looking at Malik, eyes wide with fear. Dan could see that fat Ustinov had begun to sweat. But Malik did not move, did not say a word. He stood his ground and glared angrily at Dan, ramrod stiff, fists clenched. Feeling rage boiling up within him, Dan whirled and quickly ran his gaze down the line of control switches and knobs on the board before him. He reached out and clicked off one switch, then a second. Electrical power to the communication center just went off and to the food storage lockers. He took 2 steps along the long row of panels. Life support for the sleeping quarters. Do you really want me to turn off their air? The tension seemed to flow out of Malik's body. His hands unclenched, his face relaxed almost into a smile. I'll get the prisoners for you, he said, but I want it clearly understood that I do so under protest, and merely to save the lives of innocent Soviet citizens. Go fuck yourself, Dan snapped. He stepped toward Malik and prodded him toward the door with the muzzle of his pistol. To Coctins, he said, Zig, you come with me. Then, pointing to the hulking form of Njombe, take charge here. If there's the slightest sign of trouble, shut down all the life support systems for their living quarters. Destroy the controls if you have to. He heard Njombe's deep-throated chuckle in his earphones. I'll make them breathe vacuum if they try to fight. With Malik in the lead, Dan and Coctins clumped along the low-ceilinged corridor, then down a ladderway 2 levels. The corridor here was even narrower, lower, but brilliantly lit. The glare was almost painful. It was lined with blank metal doors on both sides. How many prisoners were being held in those cells, Dan wondered. How long had they been locked in there? And for what offenses? Speaking their minds, trying to get out of the Soviet Union, failing to fall on their faces when the Kremlin ordered them to? Some 50 feet up the hallway, Dan saw a pair of uniformed guards armed with pistols holstered at their hips. It was the longest 50 feet he had ever walked. From behind the visor of his helmet, Dan watched the guards' faces. They registered surprise that Comrade Mollick would be approaching them at this hour of the morning with two men in spacesuits accompanying him. Surprise, but not alarm. He could not see the expression on Mollick's face because he was behind the Russian, holding his pistol in the small of his back, hidden from the guards. Mollick stopped in front of the guard's desk. With only a slight prod from Dan's gun, he said, "The new prisoners, release them from their cell." The guard, seated at the desk, started to tap on the buttons of the keyboard in front of him. The other, though, peered hard at Dan, trying to see through the gold-tinted visor. Cocktons slid over to one side and casually took his pistol from his tool pouch. "Do what he told you," Dan commanded, "or all three of you will be shot." The seated man glanced questioningly at Mollick. "Do as he says." He finished punching out the combination. Behind them, Dan heard the faint click of a lock. He turned and saw Carstairs push open the door closest to the desk. There was a swelling bruise beneath his eye, but as soon as he saw the spacesuited figures, he broke into an immense grin. "What did I tell you?" he called over his shoulder. "Come on!" Nobo was the last to leave the cell, and Dan let out a relieved breath when he saw that the young Japanese was unharmed. Carstairs and Vargas helped themselves to the guards' guns, and the whole squad of them started back toward the control center. "How'd you—" "No questions and no talk," Dan snapped. "Just keep moving and do as you're told." "Righto, boss," answered the Australian. Dan marched the little band back to the control center, where Njombe and the others still had the crew sitting on the floor. He studied the control board, swiftly deciphering the Cyrillic letters taped alongside each dial and switch. The entire layout became clear to him. He could destroy the whole Soviet base with a few touches of his fingers. And the 12,000 prisoners they had exiled here, they would die too. Damned clever of the Russians. The prisoners guarantee their safety, unless the shit hits the fan. "I don't think I could have lasted another hour," Halloran was babbling, unable to stop talking. "They had all of us jammed into that lousy little cell. There wasn't any air, no lights." "Cut it," Dan snapped, once he was certain that he understood the controls. "Let's get the hell out of here." He punched down the switches that shut the airtight hatches between every section of the living quarters on the levels below. Emergency klaxons hooted, but Dan knew that the Russians below were trapped in their quarters, locked in by heavy steel hatches that sealed the quarters every 20 meters, and they would stay locked in until someone turned off the switches on the control board. They took the entire control center crew with them, together with Mollick and the two soldiers, as far as the airlock. Elger was waiting for them and reported that she had run one of the emergency personnel rockets through its countdown. It was ready to lift off. Dan forced Mollick to get into a spacesuit with the others and go out to the getaway rocket with them. They packed the 8 Dolphin crewmen and his 6 raiders into the one spherical spacecraft, leaving Mollick standing on the lunar soil just outside the airlock hatch. Dan was the last to go up the ladder. He knew that Mollick would sprint for the airlock as soon as he turned his back. The Russian would not wait to be caught in the blast of the spacecraft's rocket engines. Dan also knew that by then there was nothing that Mollick or any of the others could do to stop them from getting away and making their rendezvous with Goldman and the spacecraft orbiting above them. "Don't think you're getting away with this," said Mollick as Dan backed toward the ladder. The Russian's voice sounded tightly furious, even through Dan's helmet earphones. "It looks to me as if we are," Dan replied lightly. "I know who you are, Dan Randolph. You haven't fooled me." I ought to shoot him right here and now, Dan thought. Wonder if the pistol works in vacuum. "There's nowhere you can hide, Randolph," Mollick went on. "I'm going to track you down and personally see to it that you are hanged." Dan laughed at him. "You're welcome to try." He bounded up the ladder, taking 4 rungs at a time in the gentle lunar gravity, and ducked through the hatch. The spacecraft's interior was Spartan, little more than 2 dozen acceleration couches slung in triple tiers like bunks. And Njombe was already in the pilot seat. Dan could not tell who the spacesuited figure was beside him, possibly Carstairs from the size. "Lift off in 5 seconds, Njombe's deep voice called out. Dan sat on the nearest couch as the slight jolt of liftoff made the spacecraft shudder. He grinned to himself. Then he realized that his whole body was drenched with cold sweat.